you a high performer, obsessed with growth, and looking for an edge? Welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance. Together, we'll discover underground secrets to unlocking the full potential of your mind, body, and spirit. We'll learn from some of the world's leading minds, from ancient wisdom to cutting-edge tools and everything in between. This is your host, Nick Urban. Enjoy the episode. If you find this at all useful, I'd love it if you scrolled to the bottom of whatever player you're listening to this on and leave a quick rating and review. That's how I know what you're interested in, and also how I continue bringing you thought-provoking guests. It'll take you no more than 15 seconds, and there's a link to do so in the description of this episode. Awais, welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance.
Amazing, Nick. Great to be here.
Well, you have an interesting background. You combine multiple different worlds, the ancient world of Ayurveda, the modern world of functional medicine, and then also the other lane, which is biohacking. And before we dig into your background and what you specialize in, can you give us something to foreshadow the episode, a little controversial tidbit?
Yes, absolutely. So a controversial tidbit I'd like to share is when we're talking about rebalancing the gut microbiome, sometimes you do need pharmaceuticals. Sometimes pharmaceutical interventions are both helpful and necessary.
We will talk more about that in a second. But so far today, what are the non-negotiables or unusual things you've done for your health, your performance, and bioharmony?
I can't imagine anything being unusual for you with the kinds of things that you do, the types of biohacking you do. But, you know, the first thing I do in the morning is I try to wake up at sunrise, which is a lot easier during the winter. So sunrise here has been around like 6:50 a.m., 7 a.m. I see the sun rising over the mountains. So I try to sun gaze first thing in the morning right at sunrise. That's something I've been making a non-negotiable for myself. There's benefits beyond just sun gazing to the orangish hue that exists during sunrise and sunset. And I've been noticing how powerful that's been for my circadian rhythm. I also do Dr. Joe Dispenza meditations. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy that as a way to just set my day up. He talks about overcoming to become. And in that first part of the day, it's really important to overcome the programming and any of those stressful thoughts you might have. So I really push myself to do at least a 30-minute meditation in the morning, and then just some light, you know, mobility stuff, maybe a short walk, and then I'm ready to get into the day.
Beautiful. Yeah, I usually do 20, 25 minutes of meditation. Sometimes one of the ones created by Dr. Joe Dispenza, and recently I've been pushing it a little further using some technology called NuCom, and I'm putting my brain into a heightened state of relaxation and recovery and getting more of those theta brainwaves at the same time as like doing an unguided meditation. So it's like some soundscapes in the background that are causing more of that theta brainwave state, and then also either using a different teacher like Dr. Joe Dispenza or just doing my own. And that's been a really big change I've made so far in 2023 as well.
That's amazing. I'm glad to hear that you're also a fan of Dr. Dispenza. It's just his stuff is amazing.
Yeah. So tell me about your background. How did you get started with all this?
So my background starts with my grandfather's sort of legacy and history. My grandfather was an Ayurvedic herbalist in Pakistan. And I kind of grew up with that knowledge and wisdom. However, I was always skeptical of anything ancient. My brain has always loved science, the scientific method, Western science. It was only more recently, as of 5-6 years ago, that I really started delving and connecting with, you know, my ancestral roots with Ayurveda. But to kind of like start the story, when I moved to San Diego to pursue formulation chemistry in cannabis. During this time, I was really, really passionate about functional medicine and integrative medicine due to my own health journey and healing, and was pursuing education around that. And, you know, just having, I've had so many, since I was a teenager, I've had so many odd, peculiar health challenges that I've always been reading and studying, and discovering functional and integrative medicine was just a beautiful sort of way for me to understand what's going on and actually like empower myself and my health, and realize some of the root causes of what I was going through. So, you know, I started doing some of the formulation work, and then from there I got into, started continuing my education in functional medicine and integrative medicine. And I just got this powerful calling to launch a practice and sort of share the wisdom that I've learned to empower myself with others. And that's kind of how I get to where I am.
Yeah. A lot of people in this space are either heavily steeped in the ancient ancestral sciences or in the modern functional medicine, the biohacking, but very few people actually do both. Very few people actually straddle all of these different worlds and are able to look at symptoms or issues or outcomes through multiple different lenses like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that's very true. A lot of folks I find in the Ayurvedic canon that are Ayurvedic practitioners, they'll use the term like, oh, we're incorporating cutting edge functional medicine. And then you discover that it's a very simple, you know, CBC blood panel that they're utilizing. There's nothing cutting edge about it. So, you know, my grounding is really in what the current science is showing us. I mean, biohacking, peptide medicine, regenerative medicine, functional medicine. I love the direction that these holistic and regenerative practices are going towards and how we're sort of changing our whole paradigm around health and wellness. However, some of the heuristics and the frameworks, the 40,000 foot view, can be done very well from the Ayurvedic perspective. And that's that kind of has stayed there for me. And it can be really critical at points.
Yeah. So a lot of these terms like functional medicine or integrative medicine have been hijacked in a way, and they don't actually mean that much now. And you told me in a previous conversation that your approach you're calling true integrative medicine.
What I mean by true integrative medicine is truly integrating the paradigms from the ancient wisdom, that holistic perspective of the ancient canons, like both Ayurveda, traditional Chinese medicine, eclectic herbalism, among other schools of thought. In my case, it's Ayurveda and the doshic approach for that. And I'll define that later. I'm sure you'll ask me more about, we'll get more into that, but that's really the constitutional approach is what makes Ayurveda amazing. And then on the integrative and functional side, the goal really becomes to dig into the root causes. What does the research tell us about different sorts of root causes? And they're multifaceted. And, you know, the body is not linear. It's not like when you have small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, there's a single linear cause of that. Yeah. You know, it's everything is multifaceted. And then, you know, you're kind of an investigator and you're piecing this puzzle together, and then the puzzle gets more complex and multifaceted. And that's the beauty of the work, is the art of wellness and holistic practice is learning how to piece together the puzzle. I love where the current sort of science and the biochemistry is taking us in understanding a lot of these complexities around chronic illness and, you know, helping us discover very unique points of intervention.
Yeah. This day and age, if you're not taking a holistic approach and understanding that the body is a cybernetic system, a system of systems, it's not linear. If you change one pathway here, you introduce one molecule here, then it's going to have a bunch of downstream effects. And if you don't recognize that, you're not going to make long-term health, wellness, and performance progress.
Absolutely.
Let's start right where you started, and that is with Ayurveda. You mentioned constitutions. People have probably heard Ayurveda before because I've mentioned it multiple times in this podcast. But will you give us that 40,000 foot view of what Ayurveda is and how you use it to, or as a separate lens to view health and biohacking through?
Yeah. So the most important thing to understand with Ayurveda is the doshas, which are the constitutions. And each dosha is made up of different elements. So you have three doshas, Vata, Kapha, and Pitta. Vata is air and ether element. Kapha is water and earth. And then Pitta is fire. So when you think about these doshas, everybody has a blend of different types of doshas. And some people are usually dominant in one. So when we start with Vata dosha, the air and ether element, these are your slimmer, lanky people. They're more philosophical. They're more intellectually inclined. They have an easy time skipping meals because they're so sort of in the philosophy in their head. Then you have the Kaphas. They're very earthy. They're very grounded. They have an easier time putting on weight. Their constitution can be a bit slow. Their metabolic rate can be a bit slow. People like to be around Kaphas. They're very grounding, very nourishing energy. And, you know, they need the other elements to sort of balance them out. Then you have the Pittas. These are your athletic constitutions. These are folks that are strong, fiery. They tend to like spicy food. It's not good for them. You know, we don't need to add more fire into their system, but these are people who have strong builds. They like to be very active usually, and they often like to feed their fire in one way or another. So those are your constitutions. People are usually blends of multiple doshas, one or two doshas, but many people are dominant in a single dosha, and it can be a beautiful reference point for thinking about your body, your purpose, your place in the world, and how to create balance.
Yeah. So for example, I know that I am very Pitta and I tend to gravitate towards all those things that bring me further out of balance. So for someone who's a Pitta, or I guess regardless of your dosha, how do you go about doing what's healthy? Like if I want to eat spicy food, but I know it's going to bring me further out of balance, should I eat other foods instead?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. So think about what season is Pitta, right? Like summertime is Pitta. If you're a Pitta constitution and it's the summertime and you're having, you know, brunch and it's hot outside and you're getting an omelet with like serrano peppers and you're putting all this hot sauce on it, that's going to take you out of balance. What we want to do there is add cooling things, nourishing things like cucumber, like mint, you know, things that are going to soothe you, things that are going to like ease your constitution, coconut yogurt, mm-hmm. things like that to kind of like ground you. And food is just one component of it. Activity is another component of it as well. Sometimes doing something that's like very aggressive, like high intensity interval training. If we're talking about that Pitta season, if you're a Pitta expressing individual, you know, it can be a good idea to take to do that intermittently and take a break from that. Do something a bit more yin, a bit more soothing, a bit more nourishing, you know, like go on a hike, swim in a lake, you know, like cool the body down.
Yoga, Tai Chi, Qigong, slow, gentle, restorative yin movements rather than the yang, outward, aggressive, high intensity stuff.
Exactly.
So with that knowledge, how do I go about designing what would be ideal for me in knowing my constitution type, that I'm Pitta, and then also that the fact that it's winter right now, and should I be consuming more hot food because it's winter, or should I not because of my constitution, or somewhere in the middle?
That's a great question. You know, the doshic approach can get so complicated with so many layers. This is where I take a huge step out, and I mentioned from the beginning, I have an integrative practice. I'm incorporating tools from Ayurveda and the functional and integrative canons. So I am okay letting go of some doshic principles, because at some point the doshas were kind of the only approach that existed. And now we have other approaches. So in that kind of setting, then we're going to have to think about, well, do you have a health condition? What's the doshic element of that, right? What's your doshic element? What's the doshic element of the organ system that's dominant in your body? What's the dosha of the season, right? So it gets kind of convoluted and complex. But in a nutshell, I would kind of, to bring you into balance, I would aim to do things that are cooling, that are soothing, that are nourishing, that are grounding. That would be kind of the essence of that. And if we're dealing with sort of like a health ailment, for example, if you're consuming spicy foods and that's leading to gastritis, which I've seen in pitta types, you know, they experience gastritis, which is like a burning sensation around the stomach lining and kind of just like this burning throughout your digestive tract. And they're still kind of gravitating towards the spicier food because of their constitution. We kind of have to balance that and figure out what led to that pitta dominant sort of dysfunction and kind of like address the root of that.
Yeah. And another big one for me and for a lot of people is coffee. And I know that I love coffee and I drink it regularly, but I take breaks about once a quarter, a week or two. But I know that it brings me further out of balance. So, I mean, there's definitely something there. And genetically, according to like the reports I've run, I'm a fast caffeine metabolizer. So I guess there's like a blend of the two. I do fine, but it's good for me to take breaks.
Mm, yeah, absolutely.
There, a lot of people talk about vitalism and like constitutional-based medicine as being invalid. But to me, it seems interesting because metabolic typing is like the new trendy term for it. Like, how do you help people understand that don't think that it has any validity and that these systems were not accurate in terms of constitution?
Right. So you, like I said from the get-go, I actually, you know, and I have to say share my views on this, and sometimes they'll sound a bit controversial. In some situations, the constitutional approach is flawed. Trying to doshify every ailment, every symptom, every treatment protocol can be very reductionist and limited. And that's why I'm not an Ayurvedic practitioner. That's why I'm an integrative practitioner. Mm-hmm. And I've seen a lot of Ayurvedic practitioners do that, where everything is seen under that like strict dosha lens. And it becomes like this doshic calculus around what they're sort of doing to address that. But when we think about like the term you use, vitalism refers to the fact that our body has the innate intelligence to heal itself, and we are vital beings. The goal is to kind of like step out of the way and allow that healing to facilitate itself. I would kind of separate that from the constitutional stuff, because I think we are vital. I do think that, you know, I think the science supports vitalism. A lot of the research around limbic system healing supports the idea that we are vital beings. But this other sort of question around like metabolic typing as a constitutional approach, you know, we do have metabolic states, and we do have things that are different from one person to another person. And I think that most people agree that precision medicine is a really important approach. Looking at someone's unique genes and genome is critical. If someone is homozygous MTHFR, we're going to do something a little bit different for them than someone who does not have that MTHFR SNP, right? FUTU, you know, there's quite a few SNPs I can name from a nutrigenomics perspective that the data keeps showing us, the clinical data keeps coming back and showing us that it is important and it is critical to kind of utilize those approaches. So, you know, I think that doshic approach, the constitutional approach, is a way to frame precision medicine, and I'm all for that.
Yeah, there's a lot of crossover between the two. And one is looking at the emerging research and saying, okay, we now know this about this one SNP. And the other is saying, there's a lot we don't know. Junk DNA, turns out it's not actually junk. It has a very important role in the body. And rather than waiting for each new research paper, we can follow these general principles. They might not have known the exact mechanisms, but a lot of times they understood like the way energy flows throughout the body and everything. And they were able to predict fairly accurately a lot of these individual precision medicine type needs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So what would you say are the other core facets of Ayurveda? There's the doshic system. I've heard Ayurveda referred to as a circadian science, and that's a gross oversimplification, but it's like living in tune with natural rhythms, whether that's the daily cycle or it's the seasons, eating seasonally, building your lifestyle plan seasonally. What else?
I think we're experiencing a seasonal shift, and you know, from climate change, and it seems like the seasonal approach has kind of just shifted a little bit. But regardless, I think to some degree, having some connection to the season, right? What fruits, vegetables are in season right mm-hmm. now? It's important to think about it that way. So that's an important component of it, right? It's like living in balance is the essence of Ayurveda. Body that is in out of balance is going to continue to be out of balance. Our goal as practitioners should be to bring the people we work with, their bodies, into harmony and balance. So in addition to the doshas, and two other concepts that are important, one is called Agni. That's your digestive fire. But it's a little bit greater than that. That's your whole digestive capacity. That is the, you know, I see that as the commensal bacteria that are in your gut, along with the sort of balance of pathogens, right? If you have an overgrowth of pathogens in your gut, you are bound to have less digestive fire because now your body is dealing with something called ama. Ama is the buildup of toxins in the system. So ama can be in the lymph, it can be in the liver, gallbladder system, you know, ama can be in your digestive tract. And it's really important to understand what type of toxicity we're dealing with. And obviously, functional medicine has provided us many tools to deal with heavy metal toxicity, pesticides, endotoxemia, which is like toxins produced by pathogenic bacteria, candida, parasites. So it's really important to address that ama. And then, you know, sometimes you can... The ama will affect blood health. It'll affect lymphatic health. So supporting all the appropriate systems in the body. So those are kind of two additional Agni and ama are really critical concepts in Ayurveda. And the other thing is like bringing its mind, body, spirit, right? Like if you're working with someone, is that person living in their highest purpose? Mm. Are they aligned with their dharma? Right? Dharma refers to your highest purpose. And if they're not, your wellness becomes limited because your mind, body, spirit well-being is connected to how well you are of service to your community, to the planet, to higher consciousness, however you see that. So I think that can be that kind of like can be important to sort of see health from that whole spectrum.
Yeah. And when you're working towards something, your dharma doesn't necessarily, you don't have to set it now and be bound to it for life. It can change over time. But having like that North Star that you're working towards can make a huge difference in outcomes when things get difficult, when the motivation wanes, and you're wondering why you're doing something. When you have a reason you're doing it, it makes it that much more powerful.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes.
Okay. Well, you mentioned Agni, and I know that you specialize in digestion and metabolic health and the intersection of all this. What made you choose to focus there?
So microbiome medicine as a field, it's relatively new, right? There's many ways people look at the gut health, and I'm a huge fan of the microbiome medicine approach, and that's what my training has been in over the past 5 years. Why there is because constantly looking at data, I'm constantly looking at the biome and noticing that, you know, you have at the very least more microbial genes than human genes, right? Now, in the science, we cannot always link as to how those microbial genes are influencing you and your identity, but we know that they are. So around 12 years ago, I was fascinated by fecal transplants, which is when you take one person's stool, their AKA their biome, and through a enema done in a very particular medical context, you put it into another human being. So when I was really just, I was obsessed with this because it was just fascinating. Well, one hand, it was used as a treatment protocol for antibiotic resistant infections, but people started doing it to sort of borrow another person's microbiome. And there was a lot of like forums and threads where people were talking about it. There was a lot of DIY stuff out there. And a lot of people were noticing when they would do this, that they would take on characteristics from that other person. If that other person was muscular and fit, now they were becoming, they were increasing their lean mass. If that person was overweight, now their adipose tissue was increasing. They were becoming, gaining more body fat. If that person was anxious, they were kind of picking up that person's anxiety. So those sorts of linkages, we don't entirely know how that happens. But we just know that so much of the roots of who you are as a person lie in the microbiome. And a lot of doctors that were doing the fecal transplants, because of the reasons that I mentioned, because there's so much crossover from one person to the next, they became wary of them. You know, I'm in Los Angeles, and I don't think any of those doctors are still doing like the aesthetic fecal transplants, which is like the fecal transplant for that biohacking and optimization person. That's not being done anymore, because it's like, how much do you want to take from this other person, right? You might like their muscles and their lean sort of metabolism, but do you want their anxiety or maybe their anger or their emotional state with it, right? So that just intrigued me, and it just, for me, made sense to target the microbiome and just kind of like restore it and optimize it. And from there, you know, optimize total human potential.
I love that approach. And I remember when I was reading Dr. Joe Dispenza's book, Becoming Supernatural, he gives some case studies of individuals who had organ transplants and how they had these memories and they started functioning, having the taking on the characteristics of the donor. And it's interesting. Maybe it's the microbes on the organs that they're transplanting and not the actual organ itself.
That is so interesting. Wow. That's such an interesting way to think about it, Nick. Like that's definitely some food for thought. And there's some Israeli research happening right now looking at the various organ biomes, right? There's a penile biome. There's a cardiovascular biome. There's a brain biome that has some healthy mycology. There's healthy fungi that live in your brain. You know what I mean? So it's like this whole field is going to revolutionize so much. So that's a very interesting just perspective on the organ transplants.
Yeah. It's a little eerie to think of, but especially coming from the idea where the concept of the body and mind being completely sterile, we don't want to introduce anything, to go this opposite direction, be like, okay, well, there's a ton here. Maybe it's more about the commensalism. It's about having everything in balance than it is to try and eradicate any one thing particularly. I mean, that's who you are is linked to your biomes. It should make us think twice about nuking the microbiome with drugs and other like antibiotics and things like that. Anything that hurts your microbiome might be hurting you, like who you are and your personality and other things like that.
That's an interesting perspective to think about, that does nuking the biome with, you know, triple antibiotic, quadruple antibiotic therapy kind of take away from possibly some microbes that are an essential part of your identity, neurological function, immune function. And, you know, I think the research does show that. And like I said, at the controversial point I brought up in the very beginning, sometimes you need pharmaceuticals. Yeah. Usually for me, that's in the context I work in. And just to be clear, I always work alongside a medical team with licensed practitioners when we are utilizing pharmaceuticals. Mm-hmm. And usually that's not antibiotics. Antibiotics, for the most part, I find that they can be replaced with botanicals. Botanicals are strong and effective. Herbal medicine has so much in it that we usually don't need those. But antifungals, I will sometimes use in that like proper medical context, because I feel that some fungi and yeast have evolved. And this is something many, many practitioners have noticed. And thus, it's becoming important to know how to utilize antifungals so you don't end up nuking the biome.
I interviewed Dr. Michael Biamonte on episode number 90, and he mentioned that if you take any antifungal for 21 days or longer, no matter what it is, natural or pharmaceutical or somewhere in between, the candida will mutate and become resistant to it in as little as 21 days.
I hadn't heard much about Dr. Michael Biamonte, but that's a very important point in microbiome medicine, and often that's why we pulse. It's really important to know how to pulse for said microbe. And this is where the sort of just heuristic thinking you may have around the thing may not be how the science actually works. Like a lot of people that are just like DIYing herbalism and just kind of like reading about it, they'll think that like, oh, well, if I do something, if I'm trying to eradicate candida, I should go for it, you know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks continuously. If I took a day off. Oh my gosh. Now it must have grown back and it must have like, you know, shoot, because that's antibiotic thinking. That's how you're supposed to take antibiotics. So we start to think about everything like that. But these protocols should always be pulsed. It's really, really important to understand the pulsing regimens, even for botanicals. Definitely antifungals, but even for botanicals, we need to know exactly how to pulse these things and then use non-specific antimicrobial supports, like, for example, ozone, right? 10-pass, 20-pass ozone can be effective to kind of provide you that support while you're pulsing and hitting things from multiple different angles.
Yeah, there's so many different approaches. I'm a big fan of ozone. I have a system at home, not 10-pass, but just for some insufflations. And I'm actually working on some biofilms I have right now in my nose. And I've been using that and methylene blue, not in my nose, the methylene blue, but that methylene blue. I've been using some activated, or what is it called? Oil of oregano and a special form of silver. There's a lot of different things we can do out there to help like modulate infection, but there's also a lot of things we can do to make things worse. Like that same doctor, Dr. Biamonte, was mentioning how if you're supplementing vitamin D, or I think it was copper, when you have a candida dysbiosis, then you're actually going to be making it worse. You're going to be feeding the candida and it's not going to be going where you're thinking it's going. And so in certain circumstances, it makes sense to work with a specialist on some of this stuff. So you're not thinking you're helping and actually making everything worse.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's debated. And I've seen a lot of copper deficiency coming out of the pandemic as people were taking high doses of zinc, right? I've also seen a lot of candida coming out of the pandemic. There's a kind of intersection with viral overgrowth creating the conditions for fungal overgrowth, or kind of being the tipping point where through the viral vector creating the unique symptomology it creates, the fungal organisms kind of using that as a terrain to take over. So we kind of see both of these things happen, and it's, you know, I would not let someone kind of starve their zinc copper ratio and shoot it towards higher levels of zinc while addressing that, because when you have too much zinc and too low copper, it can lead to like cold arms and feet and kind of issues with your hemoglobin and your blood circulation and blood viscosity. And many people are experiencing that because many people have kind of taken so much zinc during this pandemic with like with the viral kind of terror that they're being told about, right? So I think it's just, it's all about nuance. Despite what I just said, that point still has a lot of validity. If someone has a lot of fungal biofilm, right, and their blood viscosity is not optimized, I'm going to be very, very careful with any sort of copper and kind of like address that sort of biofilm. And before we kind of like introduce any meaningful amount of copper. However, I don't think it's always possible to starve the biofilm. But that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, not necessarily, but it just goes to show that when we decide to take one substance in isolate that's not normally found in isolate, then it can have a lot of downstream consequences. And that can even be something as beneficial in most cases as vitamins and minerals. But if we're not getting them in the context that they're usually consumed in, then we need to be a little more wary of what that could be doing.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of this, the other topic I want to make sure we cover is the on the modern side, and that is peptides and nootropics. And right here, I have a glass of water in front of me, and I have a nootropic powder, and I will be sipping on this reddish drink. It's Nootopia Nootropic, but let's dig into nootropics first and then peptides afterward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what Nootopia has done is just so incredible. You know, they've really taken that precision tailored approach to nootropics. I love their quiz process. You know, they're kind of like gauging questions about your neurotransmitter balance, you know, what sort of amino acids might be right for you, what sort of adaptogens might be right for you, right? And they're giving you that curated product that's going to help optimize your brain. Obviously, this is something, this is the last thing I'll do in a protocol, because any work with nootropics, because there's no point to add nootropics when someone's microbiome is imbalanced.
Yeah.
Right? It's like what I tell people is the greatest brain optimization is going to result from what we take out, not what we put in, right? Candida toxins that Candida poop out, like aldehydes, are so inflammatory for your brain. Just pulling those out is going to make your brain work a lot better. I love, you know, Qualia has done some tremendous things with their stacks, with their blends. As far as like specific nootropics, like which ones do I like? It all depends on the person, but combination with some amino acid and some lipid, you know, you always want to have a lipid in the morning. Like if you're taking a blend, like take a little bit of coconut oil or fish oil or something with it to give it a better delivery vehicle.
Yeah.
And then just like, you know, some of those like standard ones I really like Bacopa, Gotu-Kola, you know, different types of saffron extracts are wonderful. And then just, you know, making sure we're safe with it too, right? Like serotonin syndrome is real. We don't want to create anything like that. And we want to understand that when we're doing this strong stuff, that it can be exactly that, very strong.
Well, I had no idea that you're actually familiar with Nootopia. And I like that they're taking a similar constitutional approach where it's building multiple stacks, different products you can take depending on the kind of day you want, and also based on your own biology and epigenetic lifestyle, all that stuff. But yes, I'm a big fan of some of the herbals you just mentioned. Those are like good, fairly universal, not in all cases, but in a lot of cases. And there's also, like, there's so many cool ones that are coming out now, like extracts of different leaves, like one called zynamite, I think it's dynamine, one called theacrine, which is like theacrine and paraxanthine, which are both like caffeine analogs that don't have some of the negative side effects, don't disrupt sleep, don't send you to the bathroom, don't harm the gut or anything. They don't cause digestive upset. And there's like a lot of cool stuff out there, but I'm also always wary about using them too often and not taking breaks.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a smart precaution.
Do you use any of the nootropic peptides?
Absolutely. So nootropic peptides is they're fascinating and they're super, super beneficial. I think a lot of nootropic peptides can be just so much more powerful than, you know, nootropic botanical blends. So some of the most popular nootropic peptides include C-Link, C-Max, Cerebrolysin, and Pinaleon. So those are kind of like the four of the most prominent ones. And then, you know, the thing with kind of like any sort of nootropic brain enhancing concept is, well, sometimes the brain stuff will support the brain stuff, but sometimes a better way to support brain stuff is kind of looking at what someone needs for their system, right?
Yeah.
If someone's got an immune issue from like mold exposure and they're kind of like in that hyper-inflammatory immune state from that immune imbalance, and then we modulate their immune system with like thymosin alpha 1, that'll support their brain better than Pinaleon or like C-Link and C-Max. But C-Link can be done in a nasal spray. It can be done as a sub-Q injection, and it's very powerful. It is very good for focus. Blending C-Link and C-Max works really well with some people as well. Mm-hmm. That can prolong like that period of focus and the mental capacity. Pinaleon can be really resetting for your circadian rhythm and just like helping you sleep better. And the protocol for that is 10 milligrams a day in a sub-Q injection in the evening for 30 days straight. So that's a pretty, you know, decent amount of a peptide, but, you know, just do the protocol, get it over with. And it's, I've seen some people have some powerful cognitive transformations from that. And then cerebrolysin is, you know, the most controversial one because it's essentially just pig brain sauce. And it is, it's done in an intramuscular injection, and, you know, there's it's hard to access, and there's, it just opens up a whole new can of worms doing IM injections. But I've done cerebrolysin myself, and it's pretty powerful. You got to know how to use it. Sourcing it appropriately is really, really, really important. And sometimes you can take that orally, like Integrative Peptides has an oral one, not nearly as strong as the injectables, especially comparing to the intramuscular injection. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's still, it's an interesting approach nonetheless.
Yeah. There's also a fragment of that one called P21, and it's very difficult to find, but I've been wanting to try that one for a while.
Yes, P21 is super interesting. I have tried that. Now, some of those like targeted like SS31, P21, and peptide bioregulators are, they work for some people and they don't work for other people. Mm-hmm. And we don't know why that is the case.
Have you tried Dihexa at all?
I have yet to try Dihexa myself. It's a popular one now. It's you know, some of the peptide pharmacies are able to provide that, which is amazing. But before I recommend anything to anyone else, like to try it myself. So yeah. I have yet to try Dihexa.
Yeah, I have some laying around, and it's supposed to be really potent for learning and memory. Like, I think it's 1,000 times more potent than brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDNF.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. Yeah, I'm yes, that's what I've heard about it as well. And yeah, I'm looking forward to trying it soon.
Yeah, I wonder with nootropics, especially things that increase neurogenesis, if, like, when is the best time to use them? Because, like, say you use them and then something bad happens, say, like, an emergency, like, you're stressed out, high cortisol, all that stuff. Are you going to be, like, wiring these unpleasant experiences and memories stronger? It seems like you would.
So I worked on, you know, I've worked on different projects looking at neurogenesis with different adaptogens. This is a whole other side of my passion and research that I haven't even talked about, more on the chemistry side. But I worked on a project with a Canadian startup looking at psilocybin extracts, combining them with different types of nootropics and nootropic extracts to create neurogenesis and to see how we could best measure that, both neurogenesis and synaptogenesis, which is building of new synapses. And this was a question that one of the head scientists on the team brought to me, this exact question. And some people would say that you may be better equipped to not wire with the right sorts of nootropics in your brain, because they kind of have a favorability for wiring outside of the amygdala, so the fear sort of responsive center of the brain. And there's obviously a lot more like fMRI research going into this right now. And then the neuroimaging has kind of been evolving as well, and just kind of like showing us if that's actually true. But I think a lot of people's experience shows them that. And I think like if you go back to the OG research on adaptogens done in Russia, that was the whole point, was to use them in situations of high stress. Some of those adaptogens are nootropics, right?
Yeah.
So what we found in like that sort of research was that you are better equipped to have a more adaptive adrenal HPA axis response while having them in your system rather than not. So that's the whole essence of adaptive supports. Mm-hmm.
The Russians have some incredible research on adaptogens, a vast library of it, a lot of it that hasn't been translated. Have you come across a class of compounds in between the man-made and the adaptogens called actoprotectants?
I have not, Nick. That sounds you always talk about some really interesting stuff. I have not heard of it.
Yeah, that's a fascinating one. You should look up one called bromantane and then also one called B-middle. B-E-M-I-T. I think it's Y-L. Maybe it's I-L. I personally really like bromantane. It increases dopamine, but without doing it in a destructive habit-forming way. It inhibits the enzyme that breaks down dopamine, and it does it more gently than like your classic stimulants and different things that are commonly used as nootropics. And it's non-habit forming, and it's a banned substance for the Olympics, though. So if you are an athlete, you should probably avoid it, but it's worth looking into.
Super interesting. I've heard people talking about that, and I've never looked into it. So I'll definitely have to explore that one.
How about the racetams? How do you feel about those?
Some of the racetams are, personally, this is where like sometimes I have a strong just sensibility and just intuition come up. And like, this is where the Ayurvedic part of me just like, don't overcomplicate this stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like, we have some amazing nootropics, like the traditional nootropics. We have the mycotherapeutics, you know, mm-hmm. lion's mane, cordyceps, reishi, some of the like higher potency extracts of them. They're so good for neurogenesis and, you know, enhancing cognitive function. We even have data from like Alzheimer's patients around like fat soluble extracts of like lion's mane. So with that, I think I've just stayed away from the racetams, but I know some people are doing IVs of piracetam lately, and it's been helpful for them. Hmm. I still, you know, if we're talking about like neurogenic and brain supporting IVs, my stacks would be different. I personally would not do piracetam, but there'll probably be someone that loves them and enjoys them.
Yeah, that's my stance also. There's a lot of other things you can do, and something about that class makes me a little uneasy. I do have them and use them occasionally, but they're not my go-tos. And one thing I was thinking about throughout this segment of the conversation is even the term nootropic, however you pronounce it, is a little misleading. I guess we're more talking about the things that have like an immediate discernible effect. Because if you take a supplement, say glycine, and it improves your sleep and you sleep deeper and better and higher quality sleep, you feel more recovered the next day and you perform higher also. So there's a bunch of different ways of like considering compounds and their nootropic activity.
Yeah, absolutely. Or like taurine before a workout, right? Yeah. It's got some post-workout neurological benefits, right? Or like taking creatine is mm-hmm. it also has like neurological benefits. So it's like, I think the body is such a system that like even just trying to have this hyper specified linear dialogue around an organ system, like, you know, if we were to talk about like if your brand was around like heart performance and like cardiovascular performance, you know, it just like it's like, well, you'd be talking about everything else. You'd be talking about a lot of the same stuff, you know, because it's like, it's a general ecosystem, not a compilation of specific subsets interacting.
It's easy and comfortable to compartmentalize everything and have, and again, look at it through the linear lens, but that's just not the way the body works. So it makes sense to not necessarily do that.
Exactly.
What would you say like your top compounds or ingredients, if you were president, you would make like recommended for most people? Like, creatine is a huge one. I'm a big fan of creatine because it has so many different benefits. It's incredibly safe. It's well studied. It's good for physical performance. It's good for cognitive performance. Essential amino acids, because people tend to be very deficient in them. Mm-hmm. That's another big one for me. And then some of the adaptogens. Like, I really like ashwagandha, rhodiola, the different types of ginsengs. There's a bunch of them, but I'm curious what would be on your list.
Amazing. That's a beautiful question. When we talk about compounds, am I allowed to pick peptides?
Yeah, anything.
I think KPV, BPC, TB4 are pretty standard for me. Mm-hmm. I've been in the peptide world for many years, and I've been using peptides for a long time. And I have a hard time finding botanicals that can compare to some of those heavy hitters in terms of recovery, joint recovery, just overall system optimization. So those would be my basic standalones. Then I really like C8 oil as a lipid to take other nootropics with.
Yeah,
I'll do some amylobin extracts of lion's mane with some C8 oil to kind of give it a lipid vehicle, and then take some bacopa with that if I need a little bit of like the dopamine focus. I'll take some, like, actually just a micro of like NALT, you know, tyrosine.
Yeah,
and that'll be like a super great focus blend. I do like Joy, so I also love my dark chocolate because it brings me a lot of joy.
Yeah,
along with the focus. That heavy metal report was pretty sad, the dark chocolate heavy metal report.
Yeah.
So I've stayed away from those brands and just gotten specific about my sourcing of where I'm getting my dark chocolate from. But yeah, so those are some of my basics. I love bitters, you know, liposomal bitters before meals. It just like makes my digestion work so much better. And to me, it just makes sense to support biophysiology in that way. Those are some of my favorites. I mean, I could go on and on. Just one more I'll throw in there is low dose naltrexone.
Interesting.
CBD, because when you take CBD with low dose naltrexone, they have a synergistic effect in terms of boosting endorphin signaling. And with low dose naltrexone, you feel really good. Like, you get this healthy endorphin response. And then it also supports your immune system and immune balance. It kind of like balances TH1, TH2, and like raises TH17. And there's this whole sort of interplay with, like, I was actually, one of the research projects I did back years ago in cannabis was on this topic of how far does endorphin physiology expand? Does it sort of affect immune signaling and immune balance? And it does. So it's super interesting. And that's also another one that I take pretty regularly.
Oh, wait, I totally forgot about LDN, and I didn't realize that it has a powerful synergy with CBD or, say, full spectrum hemp.
It does. It does. It really does. And it's a neat biohack you can try, and you don't even need to take a lot of CBD. I would actually say like drop the CBD, because the dosage, that usual 20, you know, milligrams of liposomal or like 100 milligrams that you kind of usually take to calm down, with the LDN, now that's potentiated. So with LDN, I usually take like 5 milligrams, and that's like a pretty incredible, like, just calm, mentally present state that brings me in.
Beautiful. Well, we didn't talk at all about peptides other than you mentioning a couple of your favorites. And I know that you dug in deep into the world of peptides. And are there any other things around peptides you'd like to discuss?
Yeah. So I think for people listening, you know, I'm sure a lot of a lot of your listeners are people that are looking to optimize their body. And then a lot of people are also looking to kind of help themselves battle a chronic illness, right?
Yeah.
Like I've been there. I've struggled for so many years. You know, when I talked about my sort of history, how I got into this world, I didn't delve into some of the hardships I dealt with, like just being at rock bottom with mold illness, gut infections, losing so much weight. I was 129 pounds. I'm 6'4".
Wow.
So I was so skinny, you could see the bones in my chest. Oh. Like I had trouble standing. I felt like I was going to wobble and like fall over. Man. So I've really, really struggled with my health. And why I say that in the context of peptides is some peptides just truly changed my life. They gave me the juice and the battery to deal with some of the other health stuff in a more meaningful way, and also to be able to keep going to work and support myself and to just be mentally, you know, present for life. And BPC, TB4 are like the classics that everyone talks about and uses, and those are fantastic. Thymolin is amazing, and then thymosin alpha 1, and even the fragments of that, like thymogens, like the oral fragments of thymosin alpha 1 are powerful too. But thymosin alpha 1 is life-changing for so, so many people. Obviously, I'm not recommending that, you know, you do something without medical guidance, and also check your laws and stuff like that. I don't even know where the peptides are always changing around, like what's allowed in what state, what's not allowed in what state. So, but thymosin alpha 1 has been life-changing for me and so many people because it's an immune modulator.
Yeah.
And it's just supports healthy immune function, inflammatory balance. And like the difference was night and day.
Wow. And to clarify, immunomodulation refers to boosting an underactive immune system and dampening or quieting an overactive immune system. So just modulating it back into balance.
Exactly.
And then I have some GHKCU here, some copper peptide. I forget why I got it. Do you have any experience with that?
GHKCU is incredibly anti-inflammatory. It can be really good for healing a joint, muscle, tendon, ligament injury. It's also incredible for the skin.
Yeah.
And the copper there, some people say it shouldn't have copper there. That's very misguided. In the physiology of GHKCU, you do need that the copper to kind of help it transport across tissues. And it doesn't lead to tissue copper saturation like taking an oral copper product would, or like even like a copper IUD that women get is going to lead to tissue copper saturation that like the sub-Q peptide doesn't. It doesn't go down those physiologic pathways. But the doing that like a 30-day protocol with GHKCU can be incredible for skin health.
Well, Awais, I'm going to put a bow on this one, on the topics we've discussed so far. And one thing I wanted to mention, you mentioned that peptides had a huge impact on you personally, and also nootropics have had a profound impact on a lot of people. They are not magic bullets, but when the motivation is low, when you've tried everything else, that little extra bit can help get over the hurdle and start like getting the health that you've been working towards. And then after you surmount that challenge, then you can back off them and are living a better, higher quality of life just because it gave you a little kickstart in the time of need.
Beautifully said.
If people are interested in connecting with you or working with you individually, how can they do that?
You can access me, and I'd love to have conversations. Like I said, I've dealt with health challenges myself. I really love to speak to people and, you know, support people in whatever ways I can. I obviously have a clinical practice as well. My Instagram is Integrative Oasis. So that's integrative, like integrative medicine, oasis, like the oasis of the desert. So Integrative Oasis, that's it. You know, no apostrophes, numbers. That's my Instagram. You can DM me, or you can go to integrativeoasis.com and kind of schedule with me directly as well. And I'd love to support anyone I can.
Great. All right. On to the final question and then a quick rapid fire round. if there was a worldwide burning of the books and all knowledge is gone, what works would you save and which teachers?
Oh, wow. Probably Dr. Joe Dispenza, becoming supernatural. You have the healing capacity inside of you. So I think that that becoming supernatural would just be a really important gem. I would say, you know, you're in the biohacking space. A lot of people have talked about like the big biohackers and the Ben Greenfields, the Dave Asprey's, and, you know, they're pretty well known. But the other person I would mention is Chris Kresser. He's, you know, functional medicine practitioner, incredible educator, and incredible resource. I've learned a tremendous amount from Dr. Chris Kresser, especially around complex chronic illness. Yeah. And just such a brilliant practitioner. And then I would say Natalie Nidham's Biohacking Superhuman Performance podcast is such a gem. And I really enjoy it. So I would say those would be the three things that I would protect and keep with me.
Well, look at that. We brought it back to peptides again.
Exactly.
Well, okay. What is one thing that you're currently researching or interested in these days?
Fungal pathogenesis, anti-candida therapeutics, because there's antifungals, there's no anti-candidals in the pharmaceutical canon. Yeah. Why is that the case when we have so much candida overgrowth? That's well documented as a major health impairment that many, many, many people deal with. It's less common for me to not see candida overgrowth. more often I see candida overgrowth. So that's just something I'm really interested in.
What area of your own health and wellness are you working on currently?
I am supporting my sinus biome, optimizing my sinus biome right now. That's something I do regularly, but, you know, just kind of like doing more there. I'm working with the biologic dentist. I'm going to be doing some palate expansion because I have a narrow palate, and that's kind of led to some of the sinus stuff, because then I have a tighter sinus cavity. So, you know, supporting myself there, and then just physical fitness, just really enjoying exercise, strength, and building my physique.
That is a comprehensive list. What is one thing that your tribe does not know about you?
I'm a percussionist. I play all kinds of drums, ethnic percussion. Right out of high school, I actually would go to weddings and play like a dhol, which is an Indian Bhangra drum. And, you know, I did that for a little while. I almost went into just pursuing drums and percussion professionally. This was like when I was like 17, like right out of high school. While going into the science, some of the other things, I'd kind of let them collect dust, but I've whipped them out and I'm practicing more, and I'm just enjoying that.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do you manage to fit all that in, the studying, the working with clients, and also to incorporate music into your day?
It's just fun. The drums are like, it's like essential actually to play some instruments.
Yeah, it's essential to have fun in your life in whatever capacity. Mm-hmm. Awais, thank you for joining me today on the Mind Body Peak Performance Podcast.
Thank you so much, Nick. This was a pleasure. This was a lot of fun.
Okay, I'm Nick Urban here with Awais Spall, signing out from mindbodypeak.com. Have a great week and be an outlier. Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Head over to Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and leave a rating. Every review helps me bring you thought-provoking guests. As always, you can find the show notes for this one at mindbodypeak.com/ and then the number of the episode. There, you can also chat with other peak performers or connect with me directly. The information depicted in this podcast is for information purposes only. Please consult your primary healthcare professional before making any lifestyle changes.